FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2/20/19. Well, like many of you out there, entrepreneurs, you're always looking for an edge. You're always looking for the way toward success, the pathway toward success. And oftentimes you hit bumps in the road. You hit plateaus, growth seems to taper off, and for no reason that you can understand. And if you're in that situation and you're looking for solutions, then the person you are about to hear from can really help you out a lot. His name is Mike Watts. Mike, like myself, serial entrepreneur. He's founded 6 companies and has generated tens of millions of dollars in revenue. And we welcome you onto the show, Mike. And hey, you know, every entrepreneur wants to know this answer to this question, and you probably do too. How did you, Mike, get started as an entrepreneur?
Sure, Kerry. My honor to jump in and tell you this. I feel like it's being an entrepreneur is something that's happened as a natural process for me. I've always been selling something, right? So I was the guy in middle school in the lunchroom with a backpack full of candy. In high school, I had a little side gig selling fake senior IDs because you could leave campus if you were a senior ID in high school. So they've kind of been a little scattered, but beyond that, you know, I started 6 companies and totaling over $50 million in sales. I've had one big successful exit. And really, it's just been a process of trying things, trying new products, trying to find a way to add value to the consumer out there, listening to them, and then always on the hunt for the next idea. Most of my products that I've launched have been licensed technology. I always say I'm not smart enough to invent anything on my own. So I try to find someone that has an intellectual property around a really great idea with a future in a market that is growing and emerging. And so then I'll invest in taking over that IP, develop the product, build a brand behind it that I own, and start the marketing and distribution.
Hey, so when you're looking for a product or service to sell, how do you do it? Like, what do you look for and where do you find them?
What I basically look for is some general qualities of a product. Because ultimately I would say to people out there that, you know, you can really only play one sport at a time, right? Like there was Bo Jackson back in the day, then he played a couple sports, but for the most of us, we can only really focus on one thing at a time. So if you're going to do that, you better pick something that's going to be a high value and potential to have a strong upside for you. So I have a list of criteria that I always go through when I look at products. People are bringing me inventions all the time. And a lot of times I have to be the bearer of bad news, the guy calling the baby ugly because, you know, their mom and friend won't tell them that. But a lot of people need to take their idea and refine it more or choose a new space to be in because it's too narrow or not demonstrable. So some of the attributes that I look for are that the product can be demonstrated. It's really critical because especially in the day we live in now, if you can demonstrate your idea or your product with a 15-second or 30-second Instagram video, then you're going to have a market instantaneously. Mm-hmm. If your product requires a lot more explanation or just can't be demonstrated or has some sort of long life cycle to show the benefits over time, you're going to have a much larger uphill climb. You definitely want your product to be able to be protected in some way, whether it's patent pending, trademark, trade secret, something along those lines to give you a competitive advantage in some way.
Mm-hmm. So it's really not as simple as just finding a product. You think, gee, that's really cool. people will want that, because if it's not protected, you could have a lot of competition. And like you said, if it doesn't lend itself to easy demos, easy demonstrations, then it's a very tough sell. What about where the product is manufactured and getting adequate quantities? Does that figure into your equation?
It does, in the sense that it's something that can be scaled. I've made products in China and Vietnam and Mexico and in the U.S. and they each have their pluses and minuses. The company we run now, Love Handle, we manufacture 100% of our products stateside. But it didn't start that way. Originally, we were making them in China, and we were having a lot of trouble, as we've had in the past, with quality and supply chain and the amount of product that you have to order in order to get to that, you know, unit price that's so attractive with China. And what happens a lot of times, especially early, is you get caught long on inventory because you need to make a change to the package or the design or the product in some way. And now you've got 100,000 units sitting on the shelf that you have to do something with. So I try to encourage entrepreneurs to try to start small, take affordable steps. Even if your product costs you more to make in the early days and you're making very, very low quantities, if it costs you more to make than you're actually selling it for, it's okay, because that's helping you identify your proof of concept and understand what the true marketable version of that idea is before you take it to scale. And at that point, you just have to look at the feasibility stateside versus overseas and which one gives you the best advantage.
Yeah. And so, yeah, obviously you have more control if it's stateside, but the cost could be higher. And there's a lot involved in overseas acquisition of products, especially technology products. What about the concept of selling on Amazon? Is that something you believe in?
It is. I think that you have to be on Amazon. I see Amazon as a defensive measure more than anything. If you're not there establishing your brand and showing the world that this is your space and that, you know, putting yourself up there for genuine customer reviews, then someone else is going to do it, and someone else is going to establish themselves as an authority. You know, we've had a lot of problems with Amazon in the past, but those things are actually getting better. I give them some credit lately to preventing knockoffs and helping us under their brand protection program for products that have trademarks and patents. They're starting to step up and try to create an environment where it's a lot more authentic and, you know, reputable companies selling genuine products instead of eBay, which is a lot more Wild West and not really sure what you're going to get.
Yeah, you never know on eBay, although I've bought and sold tons of stuff there and always had good experiences. Well, I should say 99% of the time. One time I bought a Brioni jacket. I thought it was Brioni, brand new, and it turned out to be Paul Brioni, which was obviously a knockoff, and it was garbage. But I sent it back. You know, eBay, too, has taken large steps to protect buyers, and they've been pretty effective. I never had an issue when I wanted a refund. So best advice you can give to somebody who wants to get started as an entrepreneur, like you and I have both one time started out, and kind of you're kind of searching your way through a dark corridor and you can't really see all the bends and everything, and you have to put your hand up against the wall and kind of feel your way down the hallway. What do you say to entrepreneurs thinking of getting started?
Yeah, if you've got that drive inside you, and you know, if you're listening right now, you've got that drive in you that you just haven't ever found the specific product or thing that you want to do to start your first venture, I always tell people, just start something. Start something small. It's like a muscle. You got to flex it. And so it'll get stronger over time. You'll start to understand more about the process. You'll fail, which is great. Just fail early when it's cheaper. And then you can learn and you'll become a better and better entrepreneur. You'll identify opportunities more quickly and you'll be able to move on true opportunities with a lot more fervor. I also think that getting in front of and in the same room with someone who is successful is critical. So just offer yourself up for free, add value back to someone who you look up to, who has been successful in a space that that you are attracted to naturally, and a space that in 3 to 5 years will still be an emerging market and won't be obsolete for some reason.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had a problem in the country, Mike, for the past, you know, it's going back to the Great Recession, 10 years, entrepreneurship seems to be under attack by various parties. Mm-hmm. And new business formations have, up until the past year or so, have been decidedly down. The trend has been down. Actual numbers of new companies formed down. Probably bad if you're in the business of helping people get incorporated. But it seems like we've lost something in this country. You think that's coming back?
I can only hope that it is, Kerry. I mean, entrepreneurship is just a representation of what makes America great. Really. Mm-hmm. It's that separator. It's that differentiator. I've traveled all over the world, as have you, I'm sure. And we have something truly special here that was established and fought for, and many died for us to be able to have the freedom to pursue our dreams. And that's really what it comes down to. And I think that the system is set up, you know, from back in the Rockefeller days, to create great employees, people to work on assembly lines, to people to have a traditional career. But more and more, that system is no longer valid. So I think we have to invest in the future in allowing the young, business-minded, young professionals coming out to believe that all these things are possible and that it's okay to get out there and to start a company, to risk the traditional idea of security, because the upside is there. It's real. And I believe there's more opportunities today for entrepreneurs than there's ever been.
Yeah. And one thing you talked about is failure. All right. Any entrepreneur, you go into business, you are going to fail more than you'd ever care to think about. But yet you keep going on and you learn from your failures. You effectively, as Scott Adams said in his book, you fail your way to success. And what do you think the best way to handle a failure is? Because we all have these setbacks.
Yeah, you know, I've been blessed. I'm partners with Damon John from Shark Tank, and that's given me the opportunity to hang out with some of the other sharks. And I got to meet Barbara Corcoran. And she said this very, very well, in that it's not about failure and that it happens, because it's going to happen, right? It's about that delta between the time that something happens that's bad or a failure and the time that you get up, dust yourself off, and then get back to full speed again. That delta right there ultimately is the defining factor of success or failure in the bigger picture, right? Because you can lose a battle all day long, right? But you can still win the war if you get back up and get moving again. So I think that that's the key, is how you view failure, if you see it as a natural part of the process, or the traditional way to look at failure is, you know, oh, I failed. Like, you know, that's what the school tells you, right? You fail on a test, you failed. Like, this is a major negative thing in your life. But in fact, in reality, it's a blessing, and it can give you the strength and the wisdom that you're going to need to be successful long term.
Yeah. As somebody I heard once said, just because you fail, it doesn't make you a failure. It's only a failure if you accept it as such. If you don't learn from it, and if you don't move on, you have to get past yourself. And it's a self-esteem thing. It's an ego thing. Nobody likes to fail, but it really is a necessary part of the process.
Definitely. I mean, you look at the most successful people out there, and they're going to have a litany of failures in their past. But ultimately, it's worth it. You know, it's the whole, you know, Robert Kiyosaki versus Dave Ramsey argument, like, which one's right? I don't know. I suppose it's for you, right? But to decide, I believe that if you have that in you to be, you know, not fully risk averse, like willing to take some amount of risk, because look, not everybody can be an entrepreneur in the sense of starting a company, but I think everyone can be entrepreneurial, especially today in the world we live in. Your personal brand is out there whether you like it or not. Whether you're an employee or you're trying to recruit your wife, you know, your brand matters. And so that is an entrepreneurial mindset to say that, okay, I'm going to invest in myself. I'm going to put myself out there into the mix and then let the world decide, you know, what they want about it. But I'm not going to let anything that happens outside of me define myself, that I'm going to define myself alone. And I'm also going to be my best advocate and marketer of my personal brand. And I think that's really important for people to understand these days.
Yeah, so it's okay to be self-critical and self-correcting, but you don't want to be self-loathing and you don't want to be too hard on yourself, because this is, like you said at the beginning of the interview, natural progression to being an entrepreneur. You just hear about the failures that people have starting out, and then they bounce back and they just put it all behind them, learn the lessons, and then you go into your next venture, and hopefully that'll be successful. What's the biggest failure you ever had in business?
You know, when we were running my first big startup after I left corporate America and became a full-time entrepreneur, I had a product called the Pivotrim that we had launched as an aftermarket weed whacker head. And back then we were, you know, As Seen on TV was still big. I think it's kind of waning these days and lives more in the Instagram space. But back then we were late night TV and made an infomercial and it was doing really well. And then that got us into Walmart, and we started growing our Walmart business by leaps and bounds. It actually became 80% of our business there. And then one day we lost the account.
Ooh.
And our revenues plummeted, you know, by 80% overnight. And it was just red alert, critical for us. And I'm really proud of the way that we responded. And I say we, it's always been me and my father's partners side by side. And so we were trying to deal with how we're going to address this issue. And we said, okay, well, where's the opportunity here? We said, okay, well, the season's closed for Walmart, but it's open. The buyers are still considering products at Home Depot. So let's go to Home Depot and let's pitch this product and let's take this opportunity to raise the price, because Walmart had hammered our prices down, you know, like they do, right? And lowered our retail down to a point where we weren't comfortable with what the value was. And it was making it a challenge to sell on television as well. And so we got on a plane, flew to Atlanta, got in front of the buyers for Home Depot with our little demonstration, and pushed through and got them very interested, got one of our products onto the trimmer of the buyer and the buyer's father. They fell in love with it. Sent over the purchase order, and next thing you know, we're in all Home Depot stores with a higher priced item by that fall. And then Walmart came back and we created a lower, like a lighter version for Walmart, and then gave it to them, and then was able to then double our sales 12 months later after that major failure. Traditionally, it would have been easy to sit and grovel and say, you know, this is just not going to work anymore, we're out. But instead, we attacked it, and I'm really proud of the result. And ultimately, that grew that company and the credibility to be the number one selling aftermarket trimmer head in the category, and allowed us to sell the company a couple years later for about $7 million.
Yeah. So you're only a failure if you allow yourself to be one, right?
Exactly.
So, and how you define yourself really is going to play a big role in your eventual success or failure. So what do you tell yourself every morning when you get up?
I think that you have to remind yourself each day where you're going. And ultimately, I think that the best perspective can be gained from looking from the ultimate end back, because the reality, Carrie, is that none of us get out of this thing alive. Right?
Yeah, very true.
So if you can just be okay with that, whatever way you do, understand that's a reality for you, and be good with it, then you can say, okay, well, I have this, who knows, right? I have this period of time between now and that day, and I'm just going to make the best of it. And these are the types of experiences that I want to have. These are the types of values that I want people to say that I had. This is the type of legacy that I want to leave behind in my children and the people that know me. And, you know, in the digital age, we can live on forever. This podcast is going to live on well beyond our years. So seeing that big picture, yeah, let's hope, right? But it'll be out there somewhere. And, you know, we're getting to leave our mark behind. And if you can sort of take that big long-term perspective, then that one day you get up, you say, it's not quite as much pressure. And you can say, okay, well, this one day I'm going to move the needle from here to there. And I'm a big believer in morning routines. The Miracle Morning is one of my favorite books. You know, so I have a routine. I get up every morning. You know, I'm exercising. I'm eating right. I'm praying. I'm looking at my long-term and short-term goals. I'm writing down specific things I want to get done that day. And so by going through those, you know, and affirmations and going through that process every single day, it really sets me up for success. I'm listening to some audiobook or some podcast that's going to, you know, add wisdom back into my thought process. So I understand where I'm going to go, how I'm going to get there, and then I'm coming at it in strong physical form. So I think that's a big part of it, is investing that. It's a lot easier to just, you know, push the snooze button, right? But if you can invest in yourself every day in that way over time, you're definitely going to see the results.
Yep. I tend to agree with you. I think it's kind of, it's all up to you. And you've got to have a program, and you got to have a means of bouncing back from setbacks, because they're normal and they're healthy too, because it's better that the market tells you early that you're doing something wrong than it tells you later, right? So anyways, well, hey, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there that are going to want to talk to Mike, get the benefit of his wisdom, connect with him, see what he's doing, find out the latest opportunities. And you can do that. How, Mike, how do people connect with you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can search for me there, Mike Watts, and just put in Love Handle, which is my latest startup. You can check that out at lovehandle.com. I'm also active on Instagram. So follow me there at Mike100Watts, and then send me a DM. Glad to connect and discuss any ideas. So I really am trying to make myself as available as I can to the public at large, to help coach and encourage and allow people the opportunity to believe in themselves and that their idea can work with the right amount of effort and you know, hard work and resiliency and attitude, that they can also be as successful, much more successful than me, if they're willing to put in the work and make it a goal.
Hey, and you know, the 10 most important words in the English language, according to Winston Churchill: never give up, never give up, never, ever give up. And I think that really applies to being an entrepreneur, because the day you give up, that's when you really have failed. Mike, it's been great having you on. Any questions or comments for Mike, myself, kl@carrielutz.com is the email address. You find us on Twitter @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. And don't forget, if you're listening, podcast, YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share. Really helps the show, helps me a lot when you do that. Mike, been a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.